And you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. It's 1 p.m. Time for Armand DeMille and the Positive Mind.
Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. In the studio with us today, Lisa Arnone and Linda Vanella, both helping me out with this subject that we're doing today. Today, of course, what other subject could there be than, oh, Occupy Wall Street? It's a critical day, May Day. It's the People's Day. The protests that are going on out there are getting stronger and stronger as people become less and less heartened. However, what's been the effect? The effect is clear. Our current president's entire program is based on a support of these issues, at least in word. At least he has said over and over again that he agrees with the 99%, and he positions himself with the 99%, whereas all the Republicans, they kind of say, well, we're the 1%. It's quite an unusual battle that's going on. However, has it had an effect? Everybody is being affected by it. There's nobody overlooking it. You don't have the Republicans saying there's nothing. This has become noticeable. So noticeable that everybody who is planning to run for politics is dealing with it in some way. And for somebody to simply say poo-poo to the Occupy Wall Street is not working. In fact, none of them, any of them who had dismissed OWS, as being meaningless, are no longer even in the running. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. And we're talking to many of our friends who are out there right now. There was a poll done in October in which people who had vocalized frustrations said 65% were voting on one side. Now it's more like 77% of all people are voicing these objections. If anything, OWS has become more radical since then. Now, respondents said they were willing and ready to use civil disobedience, 98%, and violence, 31%, as a means of achieving the agenda. And the agenda is a balance of power. The results from our latest survey showed the activists we interviewed in October were not only candid but accurate about the tactics and goals. But now, it is saying, 13% already engaged in violence in support of the goals, two-thirds saying they have already engaged in civil disobedience, just as I have, and I'm sure you have. The view that the Occupy Wall Street movement has become quiescent. It's fundamentally wrong. The activists oppose as strongly as they oppose, but the trouble is, after so many months of being so crowded for so long and so wet and so dirty, it's natural that there would be a kind of fatigue setting in. We can handle fatigue. We can handle fatigue right down to my friends on 84th Street who send down pizzas everywhere they can. They own a little pizza shop and they're always doing their support. We can handle it. because there are enough people supporting the people who are actively taking these positions. It's a battle. It's a war. It's like you don't have any clean clothing. You don't really have plumbing. You don't really have that. You're fighting a battle that you're afraid you're going to lose because you're afraid it's going to peter out. But it's not petering out. Even if it's ineffective, it's not petering out. But we have something to deal with. And we have an issue to deal with, which is some of the issues that people run into. And one of the ones that I see the most with people who are involved in protests is this issue of disappointment. I want to focus on disappointment today. What does, I mean, are you disappointed? You know, I remember during the original Bush election, when Al Gore lost the election, was I disappointed? Were you disappointed? Did you feel it? Do you remember the effect of that when you saw that you had lost the election? Hey, Lisa, you were there. Do you remember it?
I do remember it, and I remember feeling that there was nothing I could ever do that would make a difference.
After all that fight, after all that war, to kind of make a difference, when you saw that the election was questionably finished, there was nothing we could do. Do you remember that, Linda?
I sure do, Armand. Yes, very well so. And spoke to many, many people, and there was a sense of, now what? A feeling of, where do we go from here? So it was a deep kind of a feeling of defeat.
It couldn't be planned better, because with that, you could then fill the average mind with cognitive dissonance. Now, what is cognitive dissonance? Cognitive dissonance is that little vacuum in your mind. If I could create it, I could do anything to you. Magicians and hypnotists use this to control people. You couldn't believe you lost that election. Now, I probably could have steamrolled that election from the beginning if I were George Bush in that crowd. I probably could have won that 100% without an issue. But instead, to bring you up to the brink and then to take it away from you left you dumbfounded. But in that dumbfounded state, in that powerless state, I could steamroll you. I could do anything I want to you. And therefore, if I decided to enter a war, to kill people, to take things, to make up stories, you were going to be completely passive, which you were, as we went through and barreled over the American public with this brutality. Well, a similar kind of thing happens on the other side, disappointment. There you're standing there with your mouth open and you're watching something happen to the world, and you're a part of it. And you're saying, but I can't do anything about it. I can't do anything about it. Because during the election, I saw I have no arms, I have no legs, I have no mind, I have no power. So now, when you get people who are in the movement who are saying, I have power, but then your power for how long? What's the effect going to be? What effects have you had on things? Do you see your effects? The answer is no, you can't see them. But every politician is paying attention to you. But there is a similar kind of almost threatening disappointment. I want to deal with that. Because even if there was not one more day of OWS, the impact is profound. Profound. It's never going to be the same again. You're never going to be able to get away with it again. You won't be able to hide it. The whole idea for transparency, the whole idea of trying to keep some kind of a balance out there is everywhere. Even though the 1% will never really allow the 99% to penetrate. They cannot be as invisible or as big as they are. So here's the differences that we make. And the problem, one of the biggest problems that you have to deal with is personal feelings. And that's what we're specialists in. The biggest personal feeling when you do something that is significant, like a protest, The biggest problem you have to deal with is disappointment. Let's talk a little about disappointment. And we're going to be taking your calls a little later, and I want to talk about your disappointment as well. What are the emotions that people feel when they feel disappointed? What are the typical emotions that you go through?
Well, disappointment could lead to depression. It makes you feel angry. It can also bring you to a very apathetic place. So there's many different places where a disappointment brings you to. And, of course, I think the best...
Well, let's say brings you to is one thing. Let me change that to invites you to. Mm-hmm. So now let's talk about the invitation to apathy. Lisa, you mentioned that this is what happened to you. How does apathy relate to disappointment?
Well, if I'm disappointed and I feel that I can't make a difference, then everything that I hear about does not move me to action. I don't feel that there's an action I can take that will make a difference. So I'm giving up all the time. I'm hearing things that are offensive, and I'm saying there's not a thing I can do about this.
So the best thing I could do to you, if you're a child who's screaming, "I'm dying, I'm dying, I'm dying," is to say, "I can't hear you.
Yes.
You don't exist." And being that, and that leads you to not caring because you're invisible. So that's one belief. One belief is to make believe, one counter against people who are aggressively fighting against you is to ignore them. We've learned that our whole lives, right? Hey, here come the enemy. Yeah, let's make believe we don't hear them, right? Maybe they won't target on us. So then you feel like you're fighting ghosts. Okay, the second thing you can do is you can get angry at them, right? So here you are trying to do something and you're not getting your way and you could get angry. So angry is another response. Hey, why aren't you listening to me? And I am angry and I'm going to sit here and I'm going to tell all my friends how angry I am. And we are angry. And you live feeling anger. Now, there's one thing we know about boxing rings. Not that I know that much about boxing rings. But they say the one that always loses is the angry one. See? Because he's striking wildly. So one of the things you want to do as an opponent is get your opponent to get angry. So you say something like, you know, your mother wears army boots. And you hope the guy's going to get really mad at you. Probably start laughing. But if he gets really, really mad at you, he starts striking at you. And that's one of the responses that would be best to the people we are opposing. Us getting angry. Anger makes us powerless. Now, this does not mean that showing force during a demonstration is anger. It is not necessarily angry. I have been aggressive many times in my life when it wasn't backed by anger. It was backed by some sense of justice. I'm going to stand here. I'm going to fight for this. But am I personally mad at you? Am I out of control? No. So disappointment could easily lead to anger. Disappointment can lead to apathy. What else can disappointment lead to?
It could lead us to a place of awareness. It could lead us to a place of, invite us to a place of contempt and awareness, I would say, that we become more indignant and more, it becomes more of an issue than we thought perhaps it was. So I think that I have known that many times I have been at that place where, you kind of, it can go through many different places, but then, gee, I didn't think I felt that strongly. I didn't think I had that belief as deeply as perhaps I do. So it's sort of a light goes on.
If the light goes on, you know, Linda, if you're lucky,
yes,
and you're Linda Vanilla, the light goes on. And you say to yourself, I'm disappointed. And then if you're really lucky, you say, what is this about? What is this disappointment about? What am I disappointed in? What was I hoping for? And how badly do I feel the disappointment? Now, we've said the disappointment could go into apathy, anger, or depression. Keep in mind, that's the other spot always waiting for you. If you try to do something and you don't succeed, there's like this big pit waiting to swallow you up so you can hide. But if you look at your disappointment instead, if you look at it and you say to yourself, what am I really disappointed in? What is my real disappointment? Is my disappointment that I did not have an effect? Well, that's one. Is my disappointment that I was hoping to get something I didn't get personally? That's the important one. What did you try to get for yourself? And usually when we feel the greatest consequences of disappointment, it's when we were hoping to get, believe it or not, some form of affirmation or love. If I succeed, then I exist. So you could laugh at yourself. Right? I had a friend who invested in the stock market, and the day after he invested in the stock market, he lost half his money. He was disappointed. He did not take it personally. He said, oh, that was just a gamble I tried. But he didn't take it personally. Could have crushed him, but he didn't take it personally. Personally means my whole being is set on doing just this. Let's go back to OWS. So people who are fighting the battle are fighting the battle because the battle must be fought and because it's time to fight the battle. The trouble with the battle is it is not a symbolic battle for people who are out of work trying to find something to do. It's a battle that so many different people are waging. It's a war that so many people are fighting. And they're fighting and they're giving up and making a lot of sacrifices to do it. And it's for a really good cause. But it's very tough. It is very tough to go through this and not have... And not suffer from it. I was watching a movie the other day called Bedazzled. You know Bedazzled? The old one. Interesting story. It's a metaphor. A man goes to the devil. The devil appears and he says to Dudley Moore, I give you 5 wishes. You can have anything you want. Just give me your soul. And so he makes 5 wishes. He wants to be powerful. He wants to be admired. He wants to be rich. He wants to be a whole bunch of things. But the devil keeps getting in the way of each one. Each one that comes out, the devil kind of introduces himself and makes it a not happy thing. So if you had an idea that you wanted to have 5 great wishes for this planet, every one that you would produce, you would have something in it that's a contaminant, something that didn't work. It doesn't happen just that easily. What if we divide up all the wealth among everybody? If everybody has all the money, doesn't that seem to make sense? And nobody has more than anybody else. And we have a kind of homeostatic place. And everybody's got, let's say if we took all the money and took it out, gave it all out, everybody had $1 million as of right now. Doesn't that sound like a great idea? What do you think, Lisa? Fabulous?
I think some of the same problems would remain. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure why I say that, but I think that wouldn't completely solve the problem.
It wouldn't solve any problem. Because having that kind of a balance is going to create another need for an imbalance. So then the guy who was left with only $1 million, does he want $2 million? And do you want a little more than your million? So we don't have the immediate solutions because any solution we find will have a problem attached to it. Anything we find, anything we're hoping for. So the question is, do we want what we're hoping for? Is OWS, does it work? Do we want Apple in California to be paying their full taxes? OWS says yes. We want them to pay their full taxes. Okay, now we can buy even more bombs. Is that what we're looking for? Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. 212-209-2900. The interesting thing about OWS is that it doesn't really have a goal. It has only one goal, and that goal is consciousness. That goal is please wake up. Please, you know, please look. And please look around you and please see what's happening. And the way the system is designed now, the 1% do not have to. Because they can isolate themselves and isolate themselves and they don't have yet to look. But then there are certain ones who are saying, yes, yes, yes. I think it's time to look as well. I think OWS has been one of the greatest movements in all of history. And we are a part of it. And I think whatever disappointment you feel, whatever disappointment you go through, your depression, your so on and so forth, those of you who are active protesters, if you've been working on this and you find yourself sinking into a depression, you call my center. We have people standing by who'll be very happy to talk to you at any time when you need that little support. Our telephone number here again, 212-209-2900. Remember the Wizard of Oz? Wizard of Oz, what happened? The Scarecrow, what did he want? What did the Scarecrow need?
He needed a brain.
A brain. He said, I don't have a brain. So he was going to go see the wizard to get a brain. And in order to go to the wizard to get the brain, he had to solve some very complex problems. And his mind was beautifully used. He was the smartest of all four. So when he got there, what did the wizard give him? Gave him some nuts and bolts, and he put them in his head, and he said, here, now you have a brain. But he also gave him a testimonial. He said, you see, you just need somebody saying you're intelligent. And what did the lion need?
A heart.
Right, because he believed he wasn't a caring person.
What? No, courage.
No, he wanted courage, right. He wanted courage. It was the Tin Man who needed a heart.
Yeah.
And the lion certainly was one of the most courageous of the animals that he didn't need. And very often what we fight for and what we think we need to keep ourselves going is not necessarily, is probably what we already have.
Yes, I think that what the Wizard of Oz showed us in that beautifully written book and film that we've all known so much about is that it's that we already have what it is we oftentimes think we don't. And in the end, they had proven it, you know, by their journey, that they did have already what they thought they didn't have. So I think it's something to think about, because when we're looking at the sort of battle fatigue of many people who are fighting and out there working so diligently, I think that the, as you say, the awareness and the ability to be able to actually become aware of what's going on with the economy, I think that in itself is certainly such a gift. And as you say, history will never be the same. We have changed it forever. And I think it has touched everyone, whether we want to call it the 99% of have-nots or the 1% of haves. I think we can easily see by the politicians and their speaking that we have all become much more aware of the way that we're living. And I think it's more that we're looking for a more peaceful, healthy, empowering society rather than the money. I don't think it's the money at all. I think it's what we attach our values to. And I think we're looking to value a more humane society. And I think that's what I know I have seen with OWS, and I certainly commend each and every one of them and us for doing what we're doing. So I believe that it has changed significantly our history and our society in this country.
We have a caller on the line. Linda, thank you very much. 212-209-2900. Let's take a call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I can barely hear you. Let me see why.
Let me grab the corded. Can you hear me better?
Yes.
Okay, great. Yes, I was listening to you today, as I have in the recent past. Just wanted to put my views on the subject, if I could.
Sure.
Well...
What's your name?
My name is... Hold on now. Hold your horses. Attila.
Attila?
Yeah.
Hi, hon. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm doing great. Thanks. How are you?
Why do you give me the name Attila?
Why?
Yeah.
Well, that side was from Hungary, is from Hungary.
Oh, that is your name.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Great. And, thank you.
My brother got the name Stephen, a different king in Hungarian history. But anyway, one way I look at it, because I have a background in anthropology, and that was my bachelor's degree, and whether we believe in creationism, Adam and Eve, or a combination of the two, creative design, we have to admit there was once a world which was much more primitive, and we lived much, much closer to nature, much more agrarian than we do even today, right? So the main theme here is, well, if we didn't have, like, companies starting businesses and employing people, what would we have? What would be the alternative? And could these companies give people just tremendous salaries and still expect to exist and make a profit? So, I mean, I understand these people out there with the Occupy Wall Street movement are trying to say something. They want more rights. They want more money. But let's not forget the alternative. And do we want to go back in time? Perhaps not to caveman days, but to, like, feudalistic days?
I hear your opinion. You know, Attila, it's not the people out there, by the way, because you're one of them. You're one of the 99% who are saying, I understand your position. And probably if we did not have corporations making money, they probably would not be outsourcing all of our work and importing, you know, people who are cheap labor and stuff like that. We wouldn't be doing that because the world hasn't found this balance yet.
Right.
But while the world is trying to find the balance, the people of OWS, not necessarily being aware of it, but what they are saying is, let's stay conscious as we go through this transformation.
Right, exactly.
And just as you're saying, because as an anthropologist, you know, it's going to find its balance somewhere down the line, but somebody had to wash their first potato. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely, and it could take, who knows, another 50 years before this global economy, which has been created because of this global technology we have, we're able to communicate with the other end of the world in a split second, has changed the world forever until we blow it up, which I hope we don't do. So, this is definitely an adjustment period of time, and people have to understand and expect there's going to be a lot of suffering. And, of course, they have the right to give an opinion, but not to destroy the place while they're doing it. That I don't...
Well, destroy, not necessarily, but kick over a barrier if you're necessary. Okay, I'll kick over a barrier if I have to. You know, I won't destroy a barrier, but I'll kick it over if it's put abruptly in my place when I'm trying to make a point.
Right.
But do I want to kick over that barrier and have it fall on a horse's leg? No. But I may want to kick over that barrier. And you, Attila, I hope you're there with me saying, this one is unjust. We got to make our point made. See? It doesn't mean just objecting to everything. But you make another point about the world economy. And again, as an anthropologist and an intelligent man, you see it.
Thank you.
The world economy is falling apart. That whole idea of a euro dollar, the Greek dollar, the Spanish dollar, this idea that we have this balance and we can keep running it. Everywhere we look, 35% unemployment, we are seeing the effect of what we built. And what we built was a good idea for the 1%, but not such a good idea for the rest of the people. And it's just falling apart everywhere. And there are people like me and you and the people at OWS and many of the corporate leaders and the politicians are saying, maybe we should look at this again in a different kind of way. So thank you for your intelligence. Thank you for calling, Attila. We got to take a short break. And when I come back, I'm going to play a little music, and then we will continue with your phone calls at 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you on WBAI 99.5 Wall Street in New York City at a very significant time. A very significant time when today there is a day of protest going around the nation and maybe around the world, where people are saying, please pay attention, pay attention, pay attention. Today is the date. There's a Wells Fargo annual shareholder meeting in San Francisco. There's a number of things happening that are just crystallizing. So wherever you can, show some support, buy somebody a pizza, raise your voice. This is WBAI. It's the voice of the people. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
No, love, you're not alone. It's all right if you cry. If things don't turn out right, all we can do is try. We'll see a show tonight. There's something we can buy. No, love, you're not alone. Don't let it get you down. It's just another day, and everything's turned brown. You've walked your bloody mile. I'll hold you for a while. No, love, you're not alone. I swear the sun will rise. I promise you. Like knives, and none of this seems real. We wish away our lives, yet somehow we survive. No, love, you're not alone. Your wounds one day will heal. Perhaps you feel too much, and maybe that's the crime. Perhaps you pray too much, and there isn't any shrine. No, love, you're not alone. I swear the earth will stay. White doves will soon down, I promise you your day. Come on, come. We'll sing old melodies, we'll sit with birds and trees, and sing for whom it pleases. Love, come on, we'll dance across the moon, turn midnight into noon, pour perfume on the breezes. When nothing ever grows,
That's Love, We're Not Alone from Jacques Brel. Jacques Brel, very important, one of the greatest voices of protest ever. If you're listening to us down in Bryant Park, as it gets to the end of the planned schedule of Occupy Wall Street, we welcome you this afternoon. What takes place? Chase and Citibank, Occupy Wall Street, Sunset Park, 5th Avenue and 54th Street at 2 o'clock. 3 o'clock, Strand Bookstore, the Strand Workers. 3 o'clock, Beth Israel Hospital, the Workers United at 10 Union Square East. At 8 p.m., Washington Square Park, Musicians 802. What a party that's going to be. Then there's the City Meditations. There's Bike Block on Union Square. The Free University Lectures, Workshops, Skill Shares, Discussions in Madison Square Park. Occupy Brooklyn March over the Williamsburg Bridge and into Wall Street. And so many more, so much more activity, which you could get. Lisa, what's the source?
I think it came to me from MoveOn.org.
Go ahead.
I think it came, it's called 99 Picket Lines, New York
99
City.
99 Picket Lines, good. And it came from MoveOn.org. 212-209-2900, my friends. It's such an important time in our lives. We're here to be a part of it. Just as a reminder, tomorrow starts the fund drive. I always wish we took out the D and called it the fund drive. You know, it's just time to make it laughter. It should be all about laughter. It could be, who tells the best joke? Want to hear my latest joke? I'll hear my latest joke. The joke is two older guys, 70 years old, they love baseball. And they just love baseball. They watch it. They used to play it. And Joe says to John, you know, you think baseball is going to be up in heaven when we die? And John says, I don't know. There better be baseball up there. Whoever dies first goes up to heaven, comes back and tells whoever's left whether there's baseball or not. Well, John dies, and Joe's waiting 6 months. Nothing happens. 6 months later, John comes down and says to Joe, I got bad news and good news. He said, well, what's the good news? The good news is there is baseball in heaven. Not only is there baseball in heaven, it's the best baseball you ever imagined. There's Babe Ruth, there's Ty Cobb, there's all the great baseball players that ever lived. And you, when you're in heaven, play as well as they do. And you're on their team or any team you want. You play day and night. They have lights at night. It's fantastic. We play all the time. And he says, well, what's the bad news? And he said, Joe, you're pitching on Tuesday. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. Hey, 212-209-2900. Let's take another one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hello?
Yes, I could hear you.
Yes, I'm like from the 60s revolutionary movement, Progressive Labor Party student for Democratic Society, and Washington, D.C. And those days, I got to meet Jane Fonda and Martin Luther King Jr. And one thing he always used to take me alongside after that threw tear gas in our face was we all have to stand together. If one of us fall, we all have to fall. We all fall down. And then the demonstration which I didn't make, which was in Memphis, Tennessee, was if something is done for the black man and done in a hurry, the whole world is doomed. Well, according to economics right now, the economics of this country might go down in January. Economics in different countries over in Europe is going down. And nobody still cares about what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, which was about the black man, something done for the black man, and done in a hurry, the whole world is doomed.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, so like, I mean, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy he made the night before he got shot.
Well, let me ask you something. What's your first name?
My first name is James.
James, are you part of what's going on out there now, even though you're from the 60s?
In my heart. My grandma's seed just came back to me in 1992. That's why I can't be over there in person.
What happened to you since?
My grandma's seed just came back to me in 1992. My grandma's seizures.
Oh, grandma's seizures. And so that means you can't be out there?
I can't. New York is... I can live in the city for years. And the stress I used to get off on. But now the stress causes me to have a seizure.
It's a good thing that we've got you in consciousness. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I'm really glad that you've had the history you had. You and I crossed the very, very same paths, by the way. I want you to know I walked in the very same shoes you did. I was with the same society you were in, the same world. We shook the same hands.
Yes. Like what happens that we have to really, really unify in a way that the system does not want us to unify. Like those of us in our climate movement that has businesses, hire black men. Hire a black man. Even if he has a first offense, hire him. Give him a chance. Do something that the rest of the system does not want us to do. Live up to the dream of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Give the black man a chance.
Well, thank you, James. Thank you so much for calling in. Thank you, and your words are heeded, and good that you're around there with us. Thanks for calling in. Do you ever hear the system justification theory? One should know about this. System justification theory is influenced by these perspectives, including social identity, social dominance theories. The advocates of systems identification justification theory argue that there is a general ideological motive to justify the existing social order. That's the premise. Whatever exists is here for a reason, number one. The motive is at least partially responsible for the internalization of inferiority among members of disadvantaged groups. That means this system includes inferiors to be an integral part of this group. It's observed at a non-conscious level of awareness. And paradoxically, it is the inferior that are strongest who are harmed the most by the status quo. So here's what it says. Keep in mind what it says. It says there are some of us who got good things and some of us who don't have as good a thing. And there are some of us who are inferior and some of us who are superior. And what are you going to use as your test, what's going to be the level that you judge it by? Well, it's clear there are certain people who are smarter than other people. There are certain people who are more able than other people. But according to systems justification theory, the fact that we include the inferiors is an important part. And the fact that they can't really be seen is an important part. But the fact that we depend on it, that there be inferiors so that there could be somebody who decides to buy the cigar shop where you sell the lotto tickets to people who spend their life savings on lotto tickets. It's all part of system justification. Occupy Wall Street challenges system justification theory. It says, no, you just can't leave it unconscious. Let's make it conscious. And by making it conscious, the whole justification falls apart.
You have about 6 calls.
It's observed most readily at an implicit, non-conscious level. It is sometimes strongest among those who are harmed by the status quo. Keep in mind, by the way, we're going to go back to our calls. We have tomorrow, starting May 3rd, we start the fund drive. I'm going to do a 2-hour special on anger. Anger itself, we're going to be talking about anger at the beginning of our fund drive. Might be a good time to get it, you should pardon the expression, kicked off.
May 2nd. Not 3rd.
May 2nd, I'm sorry. 212 209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Yes.
Hi, it's Teresa. How are you?
Hello, Teresa. Good.
How's everything?
Is it the great Teresa?
Yeah, I guess.
Is it the Teresa with a palmer?
It sure is.
It's the Teresa with a palmer, the nurse practitioner, yoga practitioner, and potential radio host at WBAI.
So I'm listening to you. I have a day off, and I decided to spend the day writing an article and listening to The Positive Mind. And it's, I just love what you're talking about, because I had a chance on my way to WBAI one day. I guess it was late fall when they were in the park. I don't know the name of the park, but it's the park that's by the PATH train, by the PATH there. And I was so curious, because at first, I'm not the type of person that gets in. I'm a little bit sheepish when it comes to some of those things. And when I saw a group gathered, I was a little bit afraid to go past. And then I found out it was the Occupy Wall Street. And as I got closer, I stopped by the park, and I started to talk to a few people. And I was so impressed with talking to them about what they were doing, how they felt, what they were trying to accomplish. And it really gave me, who's a little bit afraid of, especially somehow when I'm in New York and I see groups of people gathering and I think something's going on, I get a little bit afraid of it. But I had such a good feeling, and I learned so much from talking to these people. And then listening to them on WBAI, I learned even more. So I have to say I really gained such an appreciation for Occupy Wall Street.
And the station, and for the work you do, Teresa. You know, no light thing.
It was pretty exciting to be able to talk to people that were actually there fighting for something that they believed in.
Well, it's taking place all day today outdoors, so I hope that you get a chance to hang out with some of the folks today.
I hope to. I hope they're there tomorrow, because tomorrow I will be at WBAI to help out with the fund drive.
Good. Perfect.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you, Teresa.
Welcome, and you have a good day.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
And say hello to everyone at the DeMille Center for me.
Everyone, Teresa Palmer says hello.
Hi, hello, Teresa. Thank you for calling.
212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello there.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. So I really enjoyed. My name's Alicia, by the way.
Hello, Alicia.
How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful.
That's great. I love your show. I actually keep up with your podcast, and it's amazing. I appreciate it, and you don't know how good you are at your job. But it's really amazing. And what I want to say is that I'm a student, and I actually may not know what it feels like to be, you know, working hard for something you believe in, like what it was for Martin Luther King Jr. and all that, you know, all that jazz around that time. But I do believe that we are individuals who work together in this world. We're not individuals who exist by ourselves. And it's like we have to make certain sacrifices in order to be able to get what we want sometimes. And I think that people who want to justify the 1% of not being taxed properly, or, you know, getting away with such things, I think that, you know, they don't understand that we need people in factories. We need people who work in dead-end jobs. We need people who work in all sorts of jobs in this country in order so that we can be able to get money and be able to, you know, pay the CEOs and all that type of stuff. So it's like, you know, we need to cooperate with each other to get that done.
What's your name?
Alicia.
Alicia, let me ask you something. What are you doing today? Are you going to be actively involved in some way?
No, I'm actually in my internship right now. But
what is your internship in?
Huh?
What is your internship in?
Communications.
Okay, that seems pretty good at that. You seem very effective at being able to get your word across.
Yeah, thank you. I actually, I'm willing to give, you know, I'm kind of poor, but I guess you could say I'm poor, but I'm willing to give, you know, a sandwich or something to them. Like, I'm willing to do something for them because I think it is correct for them to say something. I'd rather have someone say something than to just stay quiet and let it happen.
Alicia, you're beautiful. Thank you for calling, and I hope you're successful in your field. And you know, one of the ways of giving when you don't have money is to go down to WBAI and answer phones during the fund drive.
Okay. You know,
and there are they always need people to do that. You have to call 212-209-2800, and you have to register your name because you can't just walk
All
up
right.
there.
I wouldn't mind doing that.
Yes, it would be good. Thank you very much, Alicia. Thank you for calling in. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanella and Lisa Arnone here talking about Occupy Wall Street, the effects of disappointment and system justification. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello, how you doing, Armand?
Good.
How you doing? I want to say, the best way to protest against this whole system and to do stuff and is to buy physical silver. It protects you against inflation, and it gets you out of their debt-based system, which you're going to be, if you're keeping your money in dollars, it's depreciating every day. Now, if you keep your money in gold or silver, it is going up. And it's funny that you say the Wizard of Oz, because Wizard of Oz is actually, I think they call it like an Augsburger.
It's about the gold standard, sure.
For the crime of 1873, it has a connection with that, and that's the devaluation of silver.
So you want to know
demonetizing of it?
Do you want to know an interesting part of it? The idea, the word Oz. Do you know where that comes from? It stands It stands for the ounce of gold.
Yes. Now the whole thing was her slippers. Actually, in the book, if you read the book, her slippers
were silver, weren't they?
Exactly, and that's the whole thing. They should have added silver to the gold standard. And then they would have been fine.
Well, maybe we just buy silver slippers.
But see, what I'm saying is if everybody goes out and buys physical silver every day, I'm not saying silver stocks or nothing like that. I'm saying physical silver, and everybody can afford it, because a mercury dime is $2.50. You can go out and buy this every day, and that's the easiest way to protect yourself and get out of the system. And that's the biggest way to protest against the system, I believe.
It's one of the ways, and I appreciate and respect your part of it as well. What's your name?
Anthony.
Anthony, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Thank you. 212, we each have our ways. Being kind, buying a sandwich, like she says. Certainly understanding yourself for not participating, understanding yourself for passively participating, and understanding yourself when you feel powerless, and you feel like you're just falling into a pit of powerlessness. That's the one to watch out for, because everything is going to move. I've been part of an organization now for 30 years, and I have watched this organization go through many, many, many different manifestations. And I just keep waiting for the next one to happen. I keep seeing it and saying, okay, here comes the next one. It's going to look terrible, and it's going to shift. It's going to look terrible, and it's going to shift. And it's going to be beautiful. And that organization is the very radio station I'm talking with you now. To me, they have been the essential part of America, of what we stand for, of peace and freedom. And they've gone through some terrible, terrible, terrible renditions to get here. But if you look at it from the outside, you see all of that is necessary. All of it is necessary. All of that stuff on the inside of people fighting with people and objecting to people and desperation and we can't pay the rent stuff. All of that is essential to keep something as beautiful as this functional and giving as much as we do around the world. This is Armand DeMille. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with some very interesting stuff, a two-hour program focused on anger. My special thanks to Joyce for engineering today and to Lisa and Linda for being here as well. Thank you very much, guys.
A pleasure.
Yes, my pleasure too.
Back with you tomorrow at 1, my friends. Bye-bye.